Welcome to the My Aggie Nation podcast. In this week's edition, we have Steve Coleman from the Bryan College Station Eagle in here to break down a little bit of the 140th anniversary celebrations at Texas A&M and talk a little bit about the educational side of the university. We also have legendary Texas A&M linebacker Quinton Coyette on here to talk about the hit and some of his charity work that he's doing in association with the hit. And we have our picks with Chelsea Reber from WTAW here in Bryan College Station to inevitably kick our butts in picking college football game. And those butts that will probably be kicked are mine and this guy across the counter from me from the zone. It's Zach Taylor.
Said butts will be kicked by guest week after week, and we keep butts coming back for more.
butts. Hey, you know, speaking of butts, have you seen, there's this guy on Twitter who's I believe a South Carolina fan. His name is like Rubber Chicken or something like that.
Is it the guy that raps? Is it the rapper?
No, it's a guy that he's like a South Carolina fan, and he does rankings, but it's like reverse rankings. It's rankings from worst to best in the SEC, and he ranks them by how butt they are.
How butt?
Yeah.
How butt they are?
How butt they are. And so
how is that even a
factor
of measurement?
It is really quite funny, and I'm trying to get, you know, one of them pulled up here. I might have to actually go back to when I sent to somebody here a couple of...
he just looks at the teams and says, well, this team has the biggest
total
butt?
Opinion. Here's the week five. I can click on his name right here, and maybe I can get the most recent rankings here, the most recent butt rankings. But it's really quite funny. The guy's Twitter handle is at...
I just Googled that. That was probably a bad idea. I looked up biggest butt rankings on YouTube.
Don't do that.
Somebody's going to walk in here and get mad.
It's at RUBR Chickens, and he ranks... Here's the week six SEC butt rankings. Vanderbilt, running away with the butt. Kentucky, solid number two butt. Mississippi State, more butt every week. South Carolina, scored two touchdowns this week. Drops in butt. We're homers. They're South Carolina fans. Missouri, they're a bye butt. Georgia, Kirby forgot to call a timeout at the end of the first half and to kick a field goal. That's serious butt. Florida, scaredy butt. LSU, butt, but even so wanted to play. Auburn, Gus undefeated in the hat only conceals butt. You're getting the idea here. It's actually quite humorous, especially if the word butt makes you giggle.
But how much butt did A&M get?
Well, A&M is the second lowest, I guess, which is a good
second
thing.
Lowest butt?
Second lowest. They are, comparatively speaking, hard to say their butt.
Okay.
And of course, Alabama is... entire state is butt, football team is not at all butt.
Okay.
So if you want a little bit of a chuckle for your SEC power rankings, go check out at RUBR Chickens, just a South Carolina fan who's doing his American duty in power ranking college football teams by their buttness.
The great American right there.
Right. So that being said, we had a game that happened this week that was very not butt. Texas A&M versus Tennessee. A&M notches their first top 10 win since 1975.
Top 10 win at home. When
at
they
home.
Were ranked
at
top
home.
10.
When they were ranked, yeah, top 10 matchup both ways. They had game day. Kind of, it was a whole thing this Saturday, Zach. It was a whole thing that happened the entire day. What was your favorite part of this entire day that happened here in College Station?
Well, the game. that was my favorite part. I mean, you know, you got game day, you got all the fanfare. We've seen that here in College Station before, but the thing is, the Aggies haven't been successful when they've been here, when it's gotten this big buildup, and they nearly dropped the ball on Saturday. And I know we'll talk a little bit more about the game. Obviously, the result is what you wanted. You wanted a win, but they almost gave that one away.
Sure. For me, the game was pretty darn impressive, except for like the, you know, almost 5 hours that it took to play.
Oh man, that was long.
But game day, a little bit of a special game day. You have Lee Corso. They're celebrating his 20 years of making his headgear selections. They show a very, you know, special headgear selection montage. Started off with Kevin Sumlin bringing back the old, you know, clip when they game day went to Houston versus SMU, and yeah. and Corso let a little bit of an F-bomb slip there on the air.
Yeah,
and so that was pretty fun. But needless to say, the whole thing culminated in a very naturally emotional Corso thanking ESPN for keeping him on even after he had a stroke in 2009 and had to recover from that. But Aggieland then got to share their love for Corso in the special moment by chanting his name, and there was a good 30 seconds that the TV show just kind of stopped down to let the fans chant for Corso. Got him a little bit teary-eyed up there on the stage, and so A&M got to share a little part in that legacy with Coach Corso, and that was a pretty cool thing out there in Spence Park across the street from Kyle Field.
Yeah, that's something, and anybody who's grown up watching College Game Day, like me and you both, I mean, they know how big Lee Corso is to that entire show and how well loved he is around the nation, and except when he picks your team, because that's almost like the kiss of death sometimes. He did pick the Aggies on Saturday, but yeah, as you talked about, Lee Corso is loved by everybody, a guy who really loves the game and is really just seems like an all-around cool guy. So that was pretty neat, that part of it.
Right, and you mentioned it. He picked the Aggies. He had a live call. He wasn't Reveille. Reveille was apparently a tied up, you know, getting ready for the football game, but it was a live callie there on stage to pick the Aggies to win the game, and you know what, they went through on the bet and got it done out there. Zach, what'd you see out there from them? Because it was a really great performance on some, you might say it was just a fantastic top 10 win, but then you look at the stat sheet and you go, oh, the offense gave up pretty close to 700. I mean, the defense gave up pretty close to 700 yards, but then they got 7 turnovers. But then the offense only scored on 3 of those turnovers, but they won the game in overtime. Little bit of a confusing game to dissect.
It was one of those interesting, really weird ways how everything shook out. I mean, Tennessee, on one hand, looked like they didn't want to win it with all the turnovers. Albeit, you got to give A&M defense a lot of credit being able to turn those things over and then recover them. But at the same time, Tennessee just plays, you're sitting there thinking you can't turn the ball over in that situation. And then it was almost like you could call it. You saw Tennessee gain this momentum going into the fourth quarter, and all of a sudden Josh Dobbs could do no wrong. Travion Williams fumbles the ball out of the back of the end zone. And you sat there saying, look, Tennessee is going to come back. They are going to either send this thing in overtime or they're going to win it. And A&M, again, Travion Williams, if he scores that touchdown, it's put away. If the defense can stop Tennessee at all, they allowed two scoring drives in that fourth quarter, a minute and 15 seconds and a minute and 8 seconds. The first drive went 65 yards. The second went 80 yards. So if they are somehow even able just to stop Tennessee at all, and if Daniel LaCamera makes what a lot of people thought was going to be an easy 35-yard field goal, something that he more than is capable of making, then it's over and it doesn't go into overtime. So, yeah, there are so many things in this game that you look at, and Aggies are happy with the win, and they should be. It was a big win against I think a pretty good Tennessee team, but at the same time, you can look at this and say, look, there were a lot of things that were not good with this game. Defense, most notably, what you talked about, a defense that created a lot of turnovers, has been very opportunistic, but didn't play very well on Saturday. Let's call a spade. Let's say what it is. They didn't play good.
We have a Miles Garrett that was mostly only in on third down. Said he was at, I believe what he said, 65 to 70%.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty low for a player to get out there and actually try to do what he was going to do. Played most of the two overtime periods. But, yeah, you look at, there was definitely some miscues and some dropping the ball a little bit on defense, doing some things that they did. But you also have a Tennessee team that was down, and when it got to the second half, was going to have to throw the ball around and sling. So I think a few of those yards are a matter of circumstance and what Tennessee had to do to stay in that game. But again, you got to get out there and make a stop so that they don't come back and they don't force overtime. A big talking point, you kind of mentioned it at
Tuesday's press conference yesterday was that Travion Williams fumble. I mean, I think all the coaches were pretty adamant of the fact that that was a heck of a play by the Tennessee defender getting in there to punch that ball out into the end zone. Really, the only advice offered, they said, well, first off, they said Williams went to the sideline. He was pretty distraught after that play.
And yeah, it kinda took some, he would be.
Right. It took some coaxing from running backs coach Clarence McKinney to kind of get him back out on the field, and he played a decent role in that overtime scoring in those two periods. But the only advice Noel Mazzoni really kind of gave up for him is, hey, when you're running and you're breaking away, you just take a little glance up on those big pretty scoreboards that they have at each end of Kyle Field and check and see if you have a guy chasing you. The only thing to that, me and some people were talking about this yesterday, when you're running to that north end zone of Kyle Field, you have the two scoreboards
on either side,
not the big one. And I haven't been, next time I'm down there, I'm going to check. Maybe you kind of check this out. Could you see, are the scoreboards coming in from that angle if you were to look up, or are they obstructed by the stands at all?
No, you should be able to see them at least from the field level. But again, you've got to be able to look to your left or to your right. You have to remember which end zone you're running to. When you look up at the scoreboard, look, It was a great play. Don't take anything away from the Tennessee kid, because he played until the final whistle blew. He did not give up. And you can make those kind of excuses. You could say, look, it was a great play, but he shouldn't have been able to be in that position. Mm-hmm. Travion Williams, I think, would be the first one to tell you that ball shouldn't have been popped out and that he shouldn't have slowed up before he got to the end zone. It wasn't like he dropped the ball before he went in. And look, put it down as a learning curve for him. Put it down as a learning point for him. Because he's still a freshman. He's so talented, and everybody forgets that this guy was in high school last year. Mm-hmm. He was playing in high school games for CE King this time last year. And so, yeah, it's a learning experience for him. I don't think it'll happen again, and it's one of those random plays that you only see once every 10 years or so, at least at the collegiate level. So, look, it was a bad play from his point. It was a good play for the Tennessee guy's point. And it's one of those deals. How are you going to address it? Just say, don't do it again. Make sure the ball is secure and you don't let up till you're through the end zone.
It's Travion Williams, a guy who, yeah, like you said, I think we heard all spring and all of the fall that at this time right now, he should be at prom. I mean, I don't know what CE King does. They apparently have like a whole summer long prom going on at there.
Something like that. And by the way, Trevor Knight hasn't played meaningful football in 19 months.
That too.
That's something else that we like to hear
that too.
A lot.
We don't talk about injuries. But we have a freshman running back who is leading the nation in yards per carry at around 8, I believe, going on right now. And so he's done some serious work, and he's done some great work for being a freshman. The other big conversation point from Tuesday's bye week press conference this week that stuck out to me, at least, was, again, we're getting into the Trevor Knight talk, the fact that he statistically, not necessarily the greatest stat line for a quarterback, but he has the best stat, as Kevin Sumlin says, and that is the win column.
Look, I think when you look at Trevor Knight, you can kind of encapsulate what he is in one word, and that's just a gamer. He's not going to blow you away with his incredible passing. He's not going to, even though he is fast and he can break off some big runs, he's not going to be electric like Johnny Manziel and Gumby style out there and spin through tackles and hurdle guys. He's not going to be doing any of that. Trevor Knight is going to go out there and he's going to give you, I know it sounds cliche, he's going to give you 110%, and he's going to do everything that he can to help your team
leave everything out
game.
On the field.
Right, exactly. And that does sound cliche, but ultimately that's what it is. And you've seen that from these big-time wins that they've gotten over UCLA and now against Tennessee. How was the winning point scored? And it was with Trevor Knight bulldozing his way into the end zone. And three touchdowns on the ground to go along with two through the air. If you're expecting Trevor Knight to complete 60 to 65% of his passes, you're probably barking up the wrong tree. At this point, you can say, look, he hasn't played for a long time. You can say that all you want to. This is who Trevor Knight is. He's going to be about a 50% completion rate passer. But up to this point, for Texas A&M, he's shown great leadership. I think he's respected throughout that locker room. At least that's what we gather from the players that we've talked to. And he's going to do everything that he can to help the team win the ball game. And he's going to try and limit when he hurts the team. And that's going to be big, because he had a couple of really bad interceptions last week. But in the end, it was him that played a great role in them winning. And so at this point, you can look at the percentages. You can say you wish his numbers were prettier, but the results are what you want.
Right, right. You know, just some a little bit of the spin that went on, because, you know, we asked Kevin Sumlin, we asked Nolan Mazzoni about his play and where they would like to see him. You know, he's sitting right here at a 53.5% passer. Nolan Mazzoni says realistically he could see him being in like the 63 to 65. That's where he would like him to be. I kind of agree with you that you might be barking up the wrong tree with that. He also said that, you know, yeah, he's going to have a little bit lower of a completion percentage because we're throwing the ball downfield more than just about any offense that I've coached, Mazzoni said in that. And if you're throwing the ball downfield, it's lower percentage. It's going to drop your completion rating. I mean, I don't know. I'd have to go back and watch the film and kind of, you know, take some notes and stuff like that. Yeah, they do throw the ball downfield a decent amount, but it's not like Big 12 or what you would normally think of the Pac-12.
No, and I don't know if I entirely buy that either, because the deep ball hasn't been Trevor Knight's problem. It's been short to intermediate passes. It's been the 10 to 15 yarders or less. Even screens that he's trying to get out to his running backs, he's overthrown them multiple times this year. So watch out, there goes the recorder. But I don't necessarily buy that, because his deep ball has been really good at times. And we've seen him be able to complete some really long passes. And you got to give a lot of credit to the receivers as well, especially Josh Reynolds, for being able to adjust. But it's been more or less the intermediate passes that he's had trouble with. So I don't know if I necessarily buy that.
Right. Big thing, having Speedy Noel back this week at wide receiver, I believe, because he kind of handled some of those real short-range duties. Let Christian Kirk get down the field a little bit more. And I think Christian Kirk was able to be one of those guys who went out and got that ball that out of the air that Trevor Knight threw, maybe not, you know, right where it needed to be, but went out and got it and pulled it in and had a pretty good game. He is, of course, leading A&M in receptions with 40. He has 352 yards and 4 touchdowns go along with that. The only guy that's picked up more yards is Josh Reynolds on about half as many receptions.
And so, by the way, a little bit related to this, Tennessee is, at least ESPN is reporting, they expect to have running back Jalen Hurd back for the game against Alabama this Saturday. And so that should be a big game, or at least a big addition for them.
That'll be interesting. I mean, I think Alabama's going to run away with this. We're not even going to include it in our pick 'em, I believe, now, because I think Alabama is going to run away with this. But it'll be interesting to see how it all matches up with a team that A&M just faced.
As beat up as Tennessee is, and they got even more beat up last week because it seemed like every time you turned around, there was a volunteer on the field. But they're at home. They're coming off a disappointing loss in which they were really rallying. I don't know if this is necessarily going to be a blowout. I think this is going to be another close game. And I'm not saying that Alabama's not going to win it, but I don't think it's going to be anywhere near what a lot of people are expecting. Just because of the name Alabama, a lot of folks expect that this is just going to be a rollover. I think that Tennessee is going to be in this game until the last final 5 minutes, because I can't count them out in any game. I thought A&M, I mean, they were up 28-7 in the third quarter, were the Aggies last week. I don't know if you can ever count Tennessee out.
Yeah, maybe have a little bit of that magic still left in the tank. I think someone described them as a team made up of just pure pixie dust.
Maybe.
So, that's a little bit of A&M football talk for a bye week. We all got all these players who were really excited about the possibility of being a little bit more of a normal college student this weekend and, you know, having a little bit of time to relax and recover. The coaches...
Study.
We have coaches who get to watch a little college football in the comfort of their own couches. They have Saturday off this week. Not have to be in the office, not have to see each other's, you know, bright, shining faces, all that. They'll have a relaxed group coming into next week. But I got to talk to a pretty relaxed, cool guy who did some pretty unrelaxing hitting for Texas A&M when he was here in the 90s. And that is former linebacker Quentin Coriat, the architect of the hit. And he did some cool charity work revolving around the hit at Aggieland Outfitters last week. I was able to catch up with him, and we'll get into that interview next here on the My Aggie Nation podcast. Welcome back to the My Aggie Nation podcast. I'm Travis Brown here, and I am with Quinton Corriott, former Texas A&M linebacker, kind of an Aggie legend along these parts, especially now thinking back on the 25th anniversary of the hit. We are here at the Aggieland Outfitters on University Drive as he signed some autographs, not only for a print to honor the 25th anniversary of the hit, but to do some good work for some kids down in Haiti. Quinton, tell me a little bit about how this all came about, and especially with the charity portion of what this is going to go back to those kids in Haiti.
Right, sure. Thanks for having me on your podcast, Travis. Appreciate it. just being able to give back to Haiti is something that I, first of all, you know, personally, feels like it's something that I wanted to be a part of, just based on sitting down and having a conversation with Gil Bailey out of Florida, Tampa, Florida, and just seeing his passion and what it meant to him to be a part of it. I decided to join forces with him, asking him, hey, how can I help you with this particular journey that you're on right now and help you build schools, you know, in Haiti?
Yeah. And so once you saw the idea for this painting and got to see the painting and what that was all involved with, what did you think?
Well, you know, with here with, you know, Aggieland Outfitters and Fadi asking me to do photos, I thought it would be a great gesture for us with this particular signing to give back to Haiti and help establish more schools throughout the country.
Definitely. Thinking back 25 years ago, what do you remember about the hit, that play, and that night?
Don't remind me that it's been 25 years now, but you know, it's been a part of Aggie tradition, and like I said this morning on the radio show, if I'd be a fool to take full credit for it. You know, have great teammates that I played with. You know, without them, it wouldn't have happened. And also a great coaching staff in place that studied their offense, you know, all week long and saw a weakness in that particular area on their offense. And then we had an opportunity to exploit it.
Great career in the NFL after your time here at A&M, but it seems like this has become a little bit of the defining moment of your football. What does that mean for you? Is it a good thing because it harkens back to your time here at A&M, or is it kind of like, hey, I also had a great career in the NFL as well?
Yeah, you know, that's kind of a signature play, you know, along with many other plays that I had, you know, throughout my career here at A&M. It just seems like that one stands out the most because of the significance of the actual play, or even the actual what happened, you know, what occurred during the play. But my NFL career was equally as good, so to speak, and it just kind of defines my college career. But yet, you know, the game has changed, media has changed. So in my days of playing, you know, Facebook and Twitter and YouTube, all that stuff didn't really exist, you know, and the coverage really wasn't there for us in Indianapolis, you know, like it is today. So again, you know, media has changed, and social media as well helps players today really establish a name more so back when I was playing, you know.
With Quinton Corriott, of the former A&M linebacker, big part of the Wrecking Crew defense. And you know, that nickname has been thrown around a little bit with some of the guys that are playing for A&M right now, with Miles Garrett, Deshaun Hall, some of the things they've been able to do. Kind of looking back on what y'all were able to do and looking at this defense, is this a little bit of a reemergence of the Wrecking Crew like some people have thrown out there?
That's a great question. I mean, I get that all the time, especially here of late, because the defense is playing really well. Chavis has done a great job of taking those players and putting them in a situation to where he utilizes their strengths. And if they have any weaknesses, you really won't be able to tell, because he's very crafty on how he takes these athletes, these players, and put them in the right position to be successful on the football field. As far as them, you know, being the Wrecking Crew, like I mentioned earlier today, they have signs of it. I don't think you can play 4 or 5 games and qualify yourself as being the Wrecking Crew, because for me, coming out of high school, I watched 3 or 4 years, 5 years of consecutively watching great defenses play. And I think when you play great football for consecutive seasons and you're able to be dominant for consecutive years, I think that's when you can kind of classify yourself as the wrecking crew is now coming back. I mean, you can't play four or five games and say that that you're there yet. But I look at the team. I like the resiliency, the passion that they're playing with. I mean, I love the way the DBs are playing, the linebackers. I mean, the team as a whole is really coming together. But I think they have more games to play, more seasons to play, as Myles Garrett and the other juniors and seniors leave. What are their successors doing? You know, the predecessors now are playing well, but what is going to happen the next 5-6 games, and then on, and then so on next year to establish yourself as the next wrecking crew?
And then finally, last question for you here. You mentioned Myles Garrett. He's done so much here in his time at A&M and really put himself and the program a little bit back on the map. What have you seen from him, and what do you kind of project for him in his football future?
Yeah, his upside is really big. I mean, statuesque guy, really great against the pass, and getting even stronger against the run. Very knowledgeable, really good body control, and he's a prototypical defensive end. When his time comes to leave A&M, when he decides to do that, his future is bright. If he stays healthy and the Most High blesses him to go on and play at the next level. But he has a bright future ahead of him, along with a lot of other guys. I mean, I look at the secondary. Evans, number 14, I can't remember his name right now. Number 6, I mean, those guys play really good football. And Hall's a great, another great defensive end. You have Mack playing nose guard, nose tackle. I mean, the list goes on. So I think as a whole, that defense, I think a lot of those individuals that are playing there now, if they stay healthy and can learn an NFL-type defense, which I don't see him having a problem doing that, will also have bright futures as well.
That's legendary Texas A&M linebacker Quentin Coyette here at Aggie Outfitters on University, signing some autographs and doing some good work for Haiti. Thank you so much, Quentin.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
We are back on the My Aggie Nation podcast, and we have special guest in with us here, Steve Kuhlman from the Eagle. He was all over the Texas A&M 140th anniversary celebrations that went on last weekend, and if you weren't quite just in tune with everything A&M, you might not have known that this stuff was going on, but some pretty cool stuff happened on campus celebrating 140 years for the oldest public college in Texas. Steve, thanks for jumping on.
Yeah. Glad to be here.
Steve, tell me a little bit about what you saw. What was the cool things that went on last week that A&M kind of threw on for the celebration?
Well, I think the one thing that everybody was talking about was the scavenger hunt that they had for students to participate in. They had, I believe, 140 tasks they were supposed to try and complete. There's a lot of talk about it, and ended up going pretty quiet toward the end of the week, but definitely something that they put a lot of effort into, bringing in an outside app to try and help with it, and just trying to get people involved. Other than that, they had a big old birthday cake out on campus where they just kind of threw a party for the university, and tried to give it a little bit of a traditional birthday. Obviously, they topped it all off with that win against Tennessee. So I think that was a big way to end the week.
Now, I wanted to talk a little bit about the scavenger hunt real quick, Steve. So what exactly, what were some of the clues? What were some of the things that they had to go just around campus? Is that right?
Yeah. And, you know, it was hard for us because you actually had to be a student to get access to any of it.
Really? Because everybody loves a good scavenger hunt.
Uh-huh. Yeah. You had to actually sign in with a university email address, and it was completely closed off for anyone outside. So it was one of those things that just didn't pan out for the rest of us.
Well, I think the coolest part about the scavenger hunt was probably the prizes that were associated with that with the students.
Right. So there was some scholarship money attached to it. We've been trying to figure out who ended up winning. They were supposed to announce it out at the game, but we haven't seen anything from it. Our people that were out there didn't hear anything. So we're still trying to figure out who ended up winning that.
Right, right. Well, beyond Pokemon Go at Texas A&M Edition, the university president gave a little bit of a State of the University address, and I know it was probably for the intellectual crowd that might be teachers and professors and whatnot in this university. Maybe aimed a little bit more for them, but well, what were some of the high points that maybe just your average ag might appreciate?
Yeah, so it was definitely aimed more towards the faculty and administrative side. The biggest thing that they probably had was just President Young laying out his vision for where they want to go in the future. If you did actually take the time to go and listen, you would have heard the word transformational probably about 15 times. But mainly they're just looking to increase collaboration, not just between the administration and faculty, but between different colleges and programs to try and encourage some more interdisciplinary projects that might create some more unique partnerships throughout the university.
And that's an interesting take, especially when you've got a guy like Mike Young who's come in now. He's been asked to change some things around, obviously, and that seems to be what his plan is. And only, gosh, I don't even know if it's been a year since he's got it. Well, it's been a year, but just a little bit over already trying to make a lot of changes.
Yeah, just about 17 months. But, you know, that's part of the reason why they brought him in was because he has a background in collaborating with the faculty and having that faculty focus. And that's something that they knew coming in, and they're really pushing for, not only in engineering. That's one area that's been really big for them. You might have heard of the 25 by 25 initiative that they've got going on, trying to get up to, I believe, 25,000 engineering students by 2025. I mean, you're talking about a huge change in the way they're doing things. But then you've also got the Health Science Center, where they just made a big hire, and I know that that's going to be a big focus for them going forward.
Right, right. And that is not Texas Rangers Hall of Famer Michael Young. That is President Michael K. Young of Texas A&M University. But, Steve, I know a big part of what you were doing as far as your work revolving around this 140th anniversary was looking back at those 140 years and kind of chronicling a little bit what has gone on here in College Station in regards to Texas A&M University. What were some of the high points and some of the interesting facts that you found as doing some of that research?
Yeah, so if you didn't know, the university was founded back in 1876, but actually has its origins in 1862 when President Lincoln signed the Morrill Act into law. And that established the first public university in the state when A&M started, which, you know, it was named the Agricultural and Mechanical College of Texas at the time. Kind of a mouthful compared to what we've got now. But, you know, there was progress over the years, but it was really the 60s when things started to change around the university when Rutter took over as president. You had female students admitted, you had African-American students admitted, and you had the core become voluntary for the first time. And that really set the university on the trajectory for where it's at now. And in the past 10 years or so, it's just exploded. There's been so much change and so many new initiatives coming in that, you know, I've talked to a couple people recently that have said, you know, this is probably one of the fastest growing times for the university and for the A&M system, too.
Did they talk at all or even touch on Rellis, the Rellis campus much, or even talk about what they plan on doing in the future as far as that institution goes?
So Rellis is kind of a confusing thing for the layperson that doesn't end up steeped in it like I am. So that's actually a system project. It's not something that's underneath the university, even though it's here in town. So what that's actually going to do is that's going to pull together resources from the other system universities to offer an additional educational experience here in town for some of those students who grew up wanting to be here, to be an Aggie, but just didn't quite make the cut. This will give them a chance to participate and be in the area. So we're looking at the first center being on the ground, I think 2018 is when they're wanting to start accepting students. But before that, they've also got some of the system agencies like TEES and TEKS and TTI that are going to actually be out there and starting to conduct research in their new facilities as they get those on the ground, too.
So kind of maybe simplifying it in a way, it's more or less a four-year blend. Is that what we're saying? Kind of a different institution that's also available for students, would-be students in Bryan College Station?
Kind of. I would look at it more like a it's hard to come up with a comparative experience for it just because there's not a whole lot like it out there. So the first 2 years, a lot of the basics will be covered by Blinn. They'll have a presence out on the campus, and they'll take care of those core classes that everybody's got to take. But then that's where the system schools will step in. Is you'll have Prairie View A&M, Tarleton, A&M Commerce. They'll offer different programs to the students where you might have a student getting an engineering degree from Tarleton, but taking some of the classes offered from other universities. It's a very interesting concept that they're coming up with out there that really just uses all the resources that they have throughout the system to offer those students a four-year degree. The way it's been described to me is that they were looking at the students that might have been going to Blinn, hoping to get into A&M, that ended up going to Sam Houston or U of H or a school like that and leaving the area. So this is giving them a chance to stick around and still participate and to, you know, get them more involved in the A&M system for some of these schools that they might not have considered if it weren't for this.
Sure, sure. So, yeah, that's one of the big issues I know surrounding the A&M University system right now. For those, I know a lot of our listeners are probably more on the sports side, might not be so plugged into what's going on with the A&M academically. What are some of the things that you're working on or that A&M is working on right now that might be interesting or might be a bullet point here coming up in the future?
Well, one thing that comes to mind is one of the new housing projects they've got going on. One of their public-private partnerships, it's the Park West Apartments. Actually, today they're doing a capping off ceremony. This is going to be the largest student housing project in the nation on a single campus. There are going to be over 3,000 beds available. That's just huge. And that's out there kind of by the George Bush Museum and Library. But it's impossible to miss if you're going down George Bush on that end.
Is it like George Bush and Pinberthy?
Yeah, it's right over there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of people that have probably been wondering what this huge complex is. That's where all the traffic's going to be coming from in the next couple of years.
Well, good. That's right by my house, so I'm real excited about that. Well, Steve, thanks so much for joining us here. What do you tweet, right?
Yeah.
What's your Twitter? How can these people get to you to complain and also praise?
Well, mine's pretty easy. It's just at Steve_Kuhlman.
And how do you spell Kuhlman?
That's Kuhlmann.
That is Steve Kuhlmann of the Bryan College Station Eagle here talking a little bit of Texas A&M anniversary and educational, you know, goings-ons with university. Coming up next, though, we have that most important segment of the podcast. We're going to pick some football games. That's coming up next.
Welcome back to the My Aggie Nation podcast. It is our favorite, most specialist time of the entire podcast. It's our college football pick'ems, and with our special guest this week is Chelsea Reber of News Talk 1620 WTAW, news extraordinaire. But before that, she was part of the sports team here as well.
So yeah,
she
it's knows good to be back in the sports chair.
And by the way, Chelsea also does part of the play-by-play broadcast for the SEC Network Plus for Texas A&M volleyball, as well as for Aggie softball. So she knows plenty about sports.
I just want to say, I'm like so radio out-muscled in here right now. This is kind of ridiculous.
We get that a lot. It's fine. It's whatever. And Chelsea also is going with the smart look today. She's rocking the glasses. Very librarian of her.
Oh, yeah. Well, good thing this is a podcast and you can't see me.
So at least we're not periscoping this one, or at least as far as she knows. So we've got a lot of picks this week. And Chelsea, you have a really something to step up to here, because overall this year, the guests have outpicked me and Travis. They are 24-9 overall. Meanwhile, Trav is 22-11. I am 20-13. We all went 3-1 last week because we initially picked five games, but that LSU-Florida game got postponed. We'll see if they make that up. So either way, it was a pretty good week overall for all of us. We all picked Aggies. They won. But we don't have to worry about this week because the Aggies will not be playing. So that being said, we'll go ahead and start from the bottom. We'll work our way to the top, just like Drake.
From the bottom now here,
yeah. Yeah, just like Drake. And we will start with some Pac-12 action, some Pac-12 after dark. It's UCLA at Washington State. And Reeb, since you are our guest, we will let you pick first.
Oh, I get to pick first.
Yeah,
okay.
Ladies first.
All right. Well, you know what? I have obviously seen UCLA play this year when they came to College Station. Have not seen any Washington State football, but I'm going to have to go with the Cougars. We're going Washington State.
And I tell you what, I think that's a pretty dang smart pick in the fact that...
Oh, then I better change it.
Okay. Well,
I'm just kidding. No, I'm going Washington State.
I think it's
going
to be Washington State all the way with this one because Leach, the Pirate, has got them playing well. They are at home against a UCLA team that, quite frankly, has struggled a lot this year. So I've got the Cougs. What say you, Travis?
Yeah, give me the fighting Blackbeard Pirates in that one as well. I liked what Washington State did last week against... Oh, who did they play last week? I got to see a little bit of that game. They were in these nasty gray helmets against a team. But anyway, you can't go against... Oh, yeah, Stanford. The really good win against Stanford. They're rolling on all cylinders. Hopefully they don't wear those gross gray helmets again like they did last week. And I think they'll take care of business.
I think whenever they're rocking their normal jerseys, they look more or less like Dr. Pepper tin cans, which I don't even know if they do those anymore. Only 10 calories. It's a manly drink that way. But anyways, the next game that we've got some Pac-12. We just did Pac-12. Talking about Big Ten, baby. Ohio State at Wisconsin. This is a battle of two top 10 teams. Is game day there this week?
I don't know.
I would think that it would be the best game that's really on the slate because it's number 8 versus number 2. And that's going to be at Wisconsin. Should be a good game. 7 o'clock at night. Chelsea, what do you think?
You know, I think I'm going to have to go with the Badgers on this one. They're at home, and I know it would be an upset, but I like the way Wisconsin's playing this year, and I'm going to have to go with the Big Red. I guess they're both red, but we're going to go with Wisconsin.
And Nebraska also is red. There's a lot of – it's almost like the SEC with the Tiger mascot. There's just a lot. But, I think that Wisconsin is going to put up a heck of a fight, but in the end – I think it's going to be Buckeyes. Urban Meyer going to prove they belong in that number 2 spot. They go on the road and get a big win.
Mm-hmm. A badger, mushroom. But no, well, they're not going to win. It's going to be Ohio State because they're one of the most cohesive teams. Even though they're a young team, they're one of the most cohesive teams out there in the country right now. A 10-point favorite on the road. That's pretty steep for a road team. Yeah, it's going to be the Buckeyes.
So having picked that, we'll go with another let's head back over. We'll go to the Pac-12 as well as independent. because we got Stanford at Notre Dame. Stanford, as we mentioned earlier, coming off a really bad loss to Washington State. And the Cardinals, not looking so hot right now.
Cardinal, excuse me.
I forgot that it was one of those singular plural names, kind of like soccer. It's weird. But anyways, they're going to be going on the road and perhaps without Christian McCaffrey. So this is putting together an interesting matchup at South Bend. Reeves, who you got?
Yeah, definitely makes for an interesting pick, interesting decision. As you said, Stanford coming off that pretty bad loss and on the road, but Notre Dame has obviously had some pretty big bumps in the road as well. This one's just going to have to go with my gut. I'm still going to go with Stanford on the road with the win.
See, that's where you went wrong. You went with your gut instead of your head, and your head would have told you that Notre Dame is the obvious winner. Brian Kelly is going to be so angry. He's going to look like a little ripe tomato there on the sideline. He's going to be pumped. And Stanford's without Christian McCaffrey. I got fighting Irish at home.
Hey, Zach, you remember what happened that week one with Notre Dame, right?
They lost.
They lost. They lost to Texas.
Future college football playoff Texas.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about that. So yeah, that was a really bad loss. This Notre Dame team isn't a very good Notre Dame team. Yeah, go ahead and give me Stanford. Stanford's going to be more physical. Give me Stanford in that one.
As long as I'm different than you two, that's really all that matters, and we've got that covered on lots of different bases. All right, now talking, let's go back over to the Big Ten. It's going to be a matchup in Indiana, Nebraska at Indiana. Talking about Big Red, the Huskers have looked pretty dang good, and they have fought their way all the way to number 10 in the nation. And doing pretty good, too, behind Tommy Armstrong, who I think is on his seventh year there. 12, something like that. But anyways, it's going to be the Cornhuskers at the Hoosiers. Reeves, who you got?
Yeah, you know, even on the road, I think I'm still going to go with Nebraska, just picking the obvious choice, which may not be the best, especially when it comes to these college pick'em games. But I'm going Nebraska.
See, this is something interesting, too. You look at Indiana and overall the games that they've played, and it's not like they played against some real great competition other than Michigan State. They beat a pretty good Wake Forest team. That's the only loss that the Demon Deacons have had on the year was to Indiana. And they lost Ohio State last week, albeit it was 38-17. It wasn't necessarily a blowout, even though at the end the numbers would dictate that. You know, I think Nebraska, I don't really know who the Cornhuskers have played so far this year. I don't think they've played a good opponent. They played Oregon, which we found out was all a fake. They were a bunch of posers after I picked them like twice in 2 weeks. Other than that, they haven't played anybody. And tell you what, I think Indiana is going to pull off the upset at home. I think they will expose Nebraska for the posers that they are. I think the Hoosiers are going to win.
Indiana wearing, I think, some special new uniforms. I think they're called the candy stripe ones. The basketball team has those fancy striped warm-up pants. It's going to look like that on the sleeves and everything. We're going to have a lot going for them in that game. But give me the Cornhuskers. I mean, come on. It's Indiana. Indiana is not a football team, football school. Give me the Cornhuskers in this one. They're 5-0. Yes, they haven't been tested a whole lot, but it's a quality team, a quality defense. Nebraska wins that one.
It's kind of a weird week in which I'm picking all these upsets, even though Chelsea picked Wisconsin to beat Ohio State. But other than that, I got Notre Dame beating Stanford. I got Indiana beating Nebraska. So we'll see. But I feel like I'm working with the house here. So that's always a good thing. West Virginia at Texas Tech, and we will do a tiebreaker on this one. How many points are scored in this game? The over under.
All of the points.
So at least 100 are going to be scored in this ball game because neither one of these teams has even heard of a defense. West Virginia has actually been pretty dang good. I believe they are still amongst the ranks of the unbeatens at 5-0, I believe. No, 4-0. I apologize because the Big 12 is kind of weird in that they only have 10 teams. So the schedules are kind of strange. So only 4-0 for West Virginia, albeit a pretty good team, playing at Jones AT&T Stadium. Tortillas and batteries win this one, or is it the burning couches?
Oh, man, I really hate both of these teams, but I still have a special place in my heart for Cliff Kingsbury. So I'm definitely going to have to go with the Red Raiders. Wreck'em Tech, get your guns up.
Ooh, that's quite the pick right there. Patrick Mahomes is one of the best quarterbacks in the country, and that offense is a very, very solid offense. You know, they all come from the same coaching tree here. all similar offenses, but I think Tech is runs it just a little bit better. And like you said, this is going to be a shootout. It's going to be who can score the most points and not who can make the most defensive stops. Texas Tech is going to score the most points in this one.
And it's going to be strange, too, because it's going to be the broest of the bros going against each other. Two bros. That's Dana Holgorsen and Cliff Kingsbury, of course, very close at the University of Houston, two friends. They like to hang out and party, what have you. But that being said, I think it's going to be the younger guy getting it done. As you talked about, Patrick Mahomes, it's going to be at Lubbock, which I think is going to at least give them a couple of points there. When you're thinking about things getting thrown at you on the field, booze raining down, so many angry, ugly, drunk people out in the desert. I think that Texas Tech is going to win this one, albeit it's going to be a big-time shootout.
And here's a fun fact. It's a discussion I've had a lot since I've been down here, and I'm just going to go ahead and throw this bonus fun fact in. I've been to a lot of stadiums. I've been to most all the Big 12 stadiums. I've been to a lot of the SEC stadiums. Still probably the most intimidating stadium I've ever been in is Jones AT&T Stadium. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of stadiums in the SEC and a lot of places that have really cool cheers and the really loud fan, you know, participation and stuff like that. But you're actually sometimes scared for your life standing on the field at Texas Tech, and there is definitely something to that.
There's a little bit difference in which you're getting booed at or you're getting yelled at versus when you might actually think you're going to be physically assaulted. And so, yeah, Lubbock's a little bit different world over there, but we can't really blame them. They have no trees. So the final game that we've got for this week lined up, it's a great SEC matchup. I think it's going to be one of the premier games of the Saturday. It's Ole Miss at Arkansas. Texas A&M has already played Arkansas. And meanwhile, they have yet to play Ole Miss. It's number 12 at number 22. What say you, Chelsea Rupert?
Well, you know, I know Arkansas came off, you know, a tough loss to Alabama, but they still put some points up on the board. I know Ole Miss comes in ranked above at 12, I believe. But, you know, I think I'm going to have to go with the Piggies on this one. I think that Arkansas is one of those teams that they actually get better as the season progresses. And I think they're going to be a little angry after that Bama loss. And so I say Arkansas over Ole Miss with the upset.
As much as it pains me, as much as I hate to admit it, I think I'm going to have to agree with Chelsea on this one. Because Arkansas, as she said, they continuously, under Brett Bielema, they look like a completely different team in the second half of the season. They're coming off a bad loss to Alabama, a tough loss at home. They will be at home again this week. And, of course, we talked about Chad Kelly got in his own little thing over the bye week. So, you know, lots of outer distractions could be going on around that Ole Miss program. I think Arkansas gets the win, even though if Ole Miss does win, it would set up an even better matchup later on in the season here at Kyle Field. But I think it's Woo Pig Suey this weekend.
This one is quite the head-scratcher for me, because you have Ole Miss, which is probably arguably the best offense in the league with, you know, A&M in consideration as well. You have Arkansas, which is a very, very strong defensive team, a very physical team, especially in the box in the middle. But Ole Miss can throw the ball around. And I think that's, if there's any place that Arkansas's defense is weak, it's on the outside. You know, Ole Miss is a 7.5 favorite. Give me the Rebels in this one. I think that their offense, that they're the matchup of their offense against Arkansas's defense is not necessarily a favorable one. I like Austin Allen, their quarterback at Arkansas. He's a tough kid, and their offense has actually been able to do some really good stuff. But I look at Ole Miss as maybe kind of like TCU, but with just a little bit more size and maybe a little bit more skill out there. And TCU gave Arkansas everything they can handle. Give me Ole Miss in that one. Well, that's our picks for this week. It's going to be a good college football slate. No Texas A&M this weekend. So go out there and, you know, maybe watch another game or maybe do some different. Go out there and do some good in the world if you're not going to watch some college football. But I want to issue a big thanks here to Quentin Coriette for hopping on the show, talking about the hit and his charity work. Also want to thank Steve Kuhlman of the Bryan College Station Eagle for coming in here talking about the educational side of Texas A&M and the 140th anniversary that was celebrated last week. And a big thanks to Chelsea Reberhoven here for picking college football games. She's, you know, probably going to do better than us in that, as most guest pickers do. So, this week, bye week, go have some fun. Next week, it's the game of the season. Texas A&M versus Alabama, number one versus probably in the top five. It'll probably be a top five matchup out there in Tuscaloosa. So stay tuned for that. We'll break all that down next week. So for Zach Taylor, I'm Travis Brown. Thanks for listening to the My Aggie Nation podcast. We'll see you next week.
It seems like every day, everything just has a way to must have it seems. But if we don't watch what we're doing, our hearts will get ruined by silly things. Good love ain't easy, girl, we know that's true. And if we wanna keep it, we gotta watch everything that we do, yeah, yeah. Don't wanna make sure my baby, make sure you're sticking with me. Don't wanna make sure that we'll be all that we can be, all that we can be.